to be a Blazer.
Hello, boys and girls. Welcome to the third edition of the Rip City Report, where we're bringing you all kinds of Blazers talk and a little bit of talk about a lot of other nonsense.
Just life, man. Yeah. Just this crazy thing.
This earth floating around.
This orb.
I am Joe Freeman of the Oregonian. He's Casey Holdall of Trailblazers.com.
Hello, hello.
Case, what's up?
How's it living? I'm doing good, Joe. I'm glad to be home for a couple days here after a quick trip to Utah before we head back out again here at the end of the week for a super fantastic four games and six nights. I guess not all Eastern Conference, because I know Minnesota's in there, I believe. But
a little
cold weather road trip, I guess we'll put it that way.
We'll be mowing that later. If there ever was a tailor-made segment for Bitter Casey, that would be...
It's up there.
Yeah. But anyway. So we are coming to you on Tuesday afternoon, and where things currently stand right now, the Blazers are 18-4. They have the second best record in the NBA. They're the best in the West. They are one game removed from another victory over the Utah Jazz at Utah, 105-94. And they have just finished a very impressive week of, I believe they went 4-1 in a busy five-game week schedule. And as it sits right now, according to my expert opinion, they have the best resume in the NBA. They've logged wins over the San Antonio Spurs, the Indiana Pacers, the Oklahoma City Thunder. Obviously, they beat the Bulls, too. We could go on and on, but I think those three wins over those three premier teams kind of has legitimized and reinforced what this team is doing. And I've noticed across the NBA that this team is really becoming a story, and even more so, people are calling them the best team in the league on all those nonsense power ratings and everything.
Yeah, no, it's the narratives are transitioning from the Trailblazers are off to a hot start and soon to come back down to earth to, hey, maybe these guys aren't actually so bad. So it's, you know, it's kind of funny that it was only within the course, I would say, like a week and a half that I went from asking questions about, do you guys feel like you're not getting properly respected and given credit for what you've done? And now it's, how do you guys keep all of these, the talk from outside about how great this team is, how do you keep that out of the locker room? How do you stay focused with that? So it's, you know, I guess it's just kind of the boom and bust cycle of the news cycle. But it's funny that it's gone from basically like, why aren't we getting the credit we deserve to,
easy,
hey,
turbo.
Slow down, everybody.
Easy,
exactly.
Turbo.
Yeah. So
let's
it's
not
a,
get carried,
you know,
away.
I guess it's a good problem to have, but it's also, it's, you know, it's kind of funny. Yeah. The, you know, those whole power rankings things, which you can see on forwardcenter.net right now, folks. As many of you have.
So actually, that's a good little segue into, we should tout our stuff a little better than we do. I don't usually say, but
that's for you, Joe. I'm far too humble to possibly to pat myself on the back or say you should read anything at forwardcenter.net.
That notwithstanding, to visit or to read and catch up on one Casey Holdall's stuff, visit forwardcenter.net on the trailblazers.com family of networks. You can also give him a Twitter follow at Chold, at Chold. And you can read all of my stuff and the fine stories and videos and what have you from the fine people at the Oregonian and OregonLive.com at OregonLive.com/Blazers. And if you'd like to follow me on Twitter, it is at Blazer Freeman.
I'm also on Instagram, too, at Casey Holdall, if you're interested at all in shoe pictures or pictures taken from inside of a plane.
Or snowy planes.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
I'm on Instagram as well, but I keep that more on the down.
Yeah, and
I know.
Yeah,
family.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, one, you're an infrequent poster, I would say. Yes. And two, yes, it's more of a, you know, you got to keep some things to yourself.
Exactly.
And in this day and age when everything seems to be public, it's important to have a little something that you,
you
keep your
own.
That's what my Facebook page is like that.
Okay.
I don't particularly use it a whole lot anyways, but, you know, I do get requests from fans to be friends on Facebook. And while I love you all and I appreciate your patroning and your reading the website, that's where I draw the line.
Stay off his Facebook.
Exactly.
Yo.
Stop harassing me on Facebook, everybody. So, but at Instagram, of course, you can follow me and please do.
And if you like photos of picture or of shoes.
Yes.
Without a doubt, the place.
Yes, I am your number one source for Trailblazers shoe news.
There you go. Which, I challenge you to find me on Facebook, because I do not exist.
Yeah, I don't believe we're friends on Facebook, Joe, and I want to keep it that way.
Dude, I have managed to live 36 years on this earth without a Facebook page, and I am determined to stick it out until that thing goes under.
Well, I think, I mean, yeah, you're already past the curve at this point to where you're, I mean, I won't say that Facebook is on the downslope of their arc, but I'm guessing it's, yeah, it's not the salad days like it used to be. So yeah, good for you, Joe Freeman.
I appreciate
for not joining
it.
Facebook.
You know, it's been tough a couple times because I have my sisters live across the country in Tallahassee, Florida. My parents are scattered across. I've got family in the South, and my nieces. I really would like to stay up to with photos and stuff like that.
Sure.
And my sister's on Facebook, but my wife is on Facebook. So if I really need to stay in touch with people, I can dip in on her account.
That's like the old internet days when like people used to have like group email accounts, like you know, like your like if you were a married couple, maybe like one of you had an email account, and you both used it. And
someone's out there in the world
exactly.
On the internet.
Yeah. And so that's Joe Freeman. Joe Freeman's the guy who uses his wife's Facebook page to keep in contact.
Bringing
with
it strong.
I don't really. We probably don't need to discuss Facebook anymore. We already have. But I just don't. I don't know what you're supposed to use it for anymore. Like, I enjoy hearing from people from high school every now and then, but mostly all I do is I kind of poke fun at people that I knew in high school.
Like, you need any help with that.
Well, one, and two, I don't see these people very often, so, like, I don't know that the joking nature that I believe I'm saying something in is really being taken that way, so
you might not have the same effect or impact that you're looking to make.
Yeah, there are probably a lot of people who went to Newburgh High School who was like, man, I thought Casey was a decent guy when we were in high school, but that guy's really turned into a jerk in this.
Now, you don't necessarily
days, so.
Know that they thought you were a decent guy in high school.
I know.
Let's
I think I can say with a fair amount of I was a much nicer person, I think, when I was younger. Yes,
okay.
At least much more
less hardened. By
yes,
the world.
Less aggressive with my thoughts. I think when I was a younger man. So
okay, well,
I mean, it was simmering, but you know, I had not gotten the confidence to be angry at everything yet. So
you couldn't allow yourself to be who you really were.
Exactly, yes. And only through years of growth and therapy have I finally been able to really be the jerk that I've become today. So.
Outstanding. Well, we
congratulations,
all love the jerk
world.
That you are.
Yeah.
So we briefly, before we get on to a few subjects we wanted to touch on today, we wanted to quickly go over last night's victory over the Jazz and look ahead to Thursday's marquee TNT matchup against the Rockets. Sounds like someone got a little nuts at the end of the game last night.
Yeah, no, there was in Salt Lake, there was, you know, it wasn't a huge crowd last night, and I know that it looked pretty thin to start the game, but it filled in as the game went on, and you know, towards the end of the game, Trailblazers, after Batum had hit that three-pointer to kind of put an end to the Utah rally. There were Trailblazer fans that were there, and you know, there's a decent contingent of Damian Lillard fans, obviously, because we're in Utah. But I've noticed in Utah there's always a decent number of Trailblazer fans there. And there was a guy there last night, who would, you know, looked like a typical Portland 20-something dude, you know, big bushy beard, decked out in Trailblazer stuff, and you know, like he walks down the stairway. From on the arena to where the bench is at, and gets about probably within 20 feet of the bench when a security guard kind of stops. And the security guard actually treated him very gently, I thought.
Well, it's so
which was nice. Yeah, no, I mean, I supported that. And so the guy goes down there, and he probably had a couple, you know, and he started chanting, you know, MVP at LaMarcus, and you know, and by this point, like the bench was kind of looking at the crowd and, you know, kind of waving. Like I mentioned on Twitter, Will Barton was waving at people to go home after Batum hit that three pointer. So everyone was kind of joking around, and this guy was yelling. He's like, LaMarcus, LaMarcus, and you know, the security guy stopped him. And he had a LaMarcus Aldridge jersey, and he threw it down, and he got a good distance on it. He got it down to the.
Right behind the bench,
basically. Oh, okay. Yeah. So someone grabbed it and handed it to LaMarcus and gave him a pen, and LaMarcus signed it up and sent it back up to him. And
amazing,
the Trailblazers won. Yeah, LaMarcus was appreciative, as he's mentioned before, for the love from people. And yeah, it was fun. Also, we had the cameraman that got hit in the face
Right.
By a ball last night. Yeah, that Jeff Clark, our team trainer, attended to him after I think he took like 4 or 5 stitches and a mild concussion, but he came back and finished out the game. And
hey, there's a game to be
exactly. There's no concussion protocols when it comes to NBA cameraman. No. You get back out there.
Now I don't know how I feel about this jersey guy, because I don't know if a sucker who is. I mean, that's a buster move. I don't know if he should be rewarded.
Yeah, you know, I kind of thought the same thing, that, you know, I like it in a vacuum, you know, and as a singular
stupid
event, you know, it's like, yeah, that's funny, and I'm glad that LaMarcus did it. But yeah, you know, there is always the chance of there being copycats and so on and so forth. But that's the thing. It's not a democracy. You can do something one time and then not do it the next time. And, you know, like next time, maybe, you know, the guy gets thrown out of the building like the dude with the cowboy hat in Casino when they throw him out of the casino for putting his boots on the table.
Or like that one chick who I don't remember where it was, but raced down to the court. Was it in L.A.?
And with Rudy? No, that was Dallas.
Well,
and it just happened again in Cleveland, though. There was a fan that got on the court in Cleveland. And that's like the third or fourth time that's happened in Cleveland. I remember it happened last year, too, with LeBron James. Or it was last year or the year before that. And yeah, like I thought someone made a good point on Twitter that was like, when is are the Cavs going to get fined for the fact that like all these people seem to be able to get on the court? Because one of these days something bad's going to happen.
Yeah,
you know,
real,
I mean,
yeah.
Like Monica Seles got shanked in the back at a game, you know, and like.
And that's the thing about the NBA is it touts itself as being, you can be as close to the action as any sport in professional sports.
Yeah, that's true.
And it's true because people literally sit right next to the Blazers bench.
Yeah.
They pay thousands and thousands of dollars for that. But there's a fine line of you have this access and this closeness to a lack of protection and security for these guys. And you hate to see any type of Monica Seles incident surface in the future. But I don't know how we got off on this tangent, but
yeah,
it kind of is a fine line of, look, this is a great product, but you've got to protect these guys.
Absolutely. And there was even a little bit last night, you know, Damian is out shooting before the game, and there's a ton of, they let a bunch of Weber State fans in before the game. And so, you know, he goes up to try to sign a few things, but as soon as that happens, you know, then everyone who's in the arena sees it and starts rushing over.
Yeah.
And Damian was fine with it, but I'm standing there watching it, and there's probably, you know, 30, 35 people around Damian at this point, and I'm thinking to myself, so I'm like, man, you know, like, we might have to call someone over here in a minute, because one, you know, he needs to go through his warm-up as well, and it's, you know, once you sign one thing, which is why a lot of guys sometimes don't sign anything, or they only do it at a particular time, because once you do one, the 5-year-old kid that comes over next can't be like, no, kid, I'm not going to do it, so it becomes an issue, and you know, it's great that people want to, you know, like interact, and I think for the most part the players really enjoy it, but yeah, it's I guess my takeaway here is when a player maybe like bristles at doing something for you and you think they're a jerk, you know, maybe you're right, but I think for the most part that player is coming from a perspective of, I've been in this situation before and it didn't turn out particularly well,
yeah.
So like I'm going to have to just, you know, kind of draw a line somewhere. So.
No, whatever. They're all jerks.
Yeah, exactly. They're all terrible, and they're all millionaire jerks. So, don't care about.
I will say
themselves.
This to our loyal podcast listeners: don't be that guy. Don't throw your jersey at the crowd. Don't or at the bench. Don't do anything stupid. Run onto the court, and unless you're at a baseball game and you want a streak, then it's that's all on you.
Yeah. Well, and other sports too. Just real quick. In the NBA, they don't. They just like get that guy off the court.
You
and
gotta
kind of extra him out. Yeah,
punish.
In other sports, that guy gets drilled.
Yes.
You know, like if it's not someone from security, that's a free shot for one of those players out
that's
there too.
Thing.
And they punk those guys, and I fully support that.
Oh,
that,
and
that
the
is
chase down in
with.
The outfield,
exactly.
In a Major League
and
Baseball
then,
game. You are waiting for that sucker
then,
to
when
get
you
punked.
When you get that guy up, you get him low, and you drive your legs through him, and just.
Bam!
Boom.
Right to the ground.
Yeah. That's how it should be dealt with. And I realize that maybe some of these guys aren't exactly mentally stable. But hey, if you're able to get to the arena, get a ticket, get down to the floor, and then
you
have the wherewithal to get on the floor,
arena in
exactly,
sports,
you got to get checked.
It's like the Colosseum in the Roman days, man.
Yeah,
it is no whole. It's open sesame.
And the NBA doesn't treat it that way. They're like, man, let's get this crazy guy off the court. It's like, no, man.
No, like
you should run him into the deck.
I like it. Yes.
Yeah.
I agree. We're on the same page.
Okay.
Here.
Good.
Speaking of being on the same page, the Blazers' offense is a work of art right now, and everyone on that team clearly is on the same page. It's really been an impressive development to watch all these pieces come together, and to watch Terry Stotts' vision for an offense and for a team game surface and materialize before our very eyes. Let me read off some statistics to back up just how impressive this offense has been this year. Again, we're recording Tuesday, late morning, early afternoon, and the Blazers are 18-4. They currently are averaging 106.2 points per game, which is second in the NBA. They're 10th in the league in shooting, 45.8%. They are second in three-point shooting, shooting 41.5% from long range. They're second in free throw shooting. They're sixth in effective field goal percent shooting. They're fourth in point differential, outscoring opponents by 6.3 points per game. They're sixth in turnovers, so they're protecting the ball. They're also seventh in assists, so they're sharing, averaging about 23 a game. You combine that together, they're fifth in the NBA in assist-to-turnover ratio, which is outstanding. And they are first in offensive efficiency, according to the John Hollinger stats guru.
Yeah,
so,
that's the big one, too. That's the points per 100 possessions.
Yeah,
which,
and it's 109.1 is what that is.
Well, and actually, I believe, according to NBA.com, it's 109.5.
Ooh,
so they might have tacked a few on from last game, which is a full point higher than the next team, which is the Miami Heat.
Wow,
so
there you go.
A but, real impressive offensive performance right now for the Trailblazers team.
It makes me historic. Right, and it makes me think back to when Terry Stotts was first hired, and he was asked in his introductory press conference about style of play, and particularly in light of the season he was about to coach and the team he was about to coach, because he was hired well after the team had been constructed, and it was quite clear that in his first year the Blazers were not going to be all that good, and certainly not were not going to be playoff contenders. And he was asked whether it mattered how a team played and how they won or lost, and he said, he was quite emphatic that he said, yes, it does matter how you play. It matters the style of play that you have. In essence, he was saying that he had hoped and planned to bring an exciting brand of basketball loaded with movement and ball movement and player movement and exciting offensive-minded basketball. And I think after years of that was one of the biggest criticisms of former coach Nate McMillan.
Absolutely.
Was this grinded out, kind of isolation style of play, slow the game down, possession-oriented. After years of that, this really has been a breath of fresh air to Blazers fans, and you're really seeing the hallmarks of Terry Stotts' offense, the trust-the-pass philosophy, the move at all times, stimulate some unselfish play and team chemistry, and everybody on this roster really is complementing each other amazingly well, and you're seeing the vast number of weapons that this offense has really click right now.
Absolutely, and I think you make a good point about the style of play and how it's an exciting brand of basketball to watch, which is interesting because, you know, you talk about it, one of the complaints about the McMillan teams were that they were grinded out in kind of a slow-down possession-style basketball, and that's not the case for this Trailblazer team, but if you look at their pace rating as well, which is, you know, how many possessions they play per game.
Not that high.
They're on the bottom third of the league at, let me see here, what are they at? I believe at 90, somewhere around 95, 96, 96.34. So,
well,
yeah,
when
it's
you're
not
the most efficient offense, that certainly factors.
Exactly.
In
that. And that's true. I mean, obviously, when the other team is taking the ball out of the bucket, you know, like you're playing fewer possessions because it's a little bit of a slower game when you're
right.
not missing shots. But yeah, there's a notion kind of, too, that maybe you can't be you have to play a lot of possessions to be a better team. And that was one of the things that I think. There's been talk about the Grizzlies and how, you know, when Dave Yeager came in, they were trying to play more possession, but it wasn't really working because it's not really tailored to the guys that they have on their team. And I feel like with this team in particular, the Trailblazer team, that, you know, they're not an up and down. I mean, they do get out in transition from time to time, but they're not that kind of quick
Denver.
Dynamic. Yeah, exactly. That you kind of assume is going to produce an efficient offense. They're more of a, like you said, a trust the pass and a ball moving offense and a flow offense, and I thought it was interesting. And last night's pregame, your colleague Mike Taquito asked Terry about plays and, you know, like how much
is he calling
of the
plays?
Offense are from play calls and how much are from reads and from what Terry calls flow,
mm-hmm.
which is basically the players getting out, seeing something, and then running through it. And Terry was saying, he's like, well, you know, I haven't really looked at it. He's like, and we do track it, but it's not something that we've really paid a ton of attention to. But I mean, he's it sounded like it was maybe like a 60-40 kind of thing. That
yeah, and I've talked to him about this, and I've heard him mention several times that he hasn't had to call a lot of plays.
Yeah.
And a lot of that is when you hear the Blazers talk about how much trust Terry has in him. That's one of the things I think they're talking about is they know the offense. He's taught them the offense, and they go out and run it. And you know, this idea of the extra pass, quote unquote, Terry likes to call it the next pass. And I think we're seeing that a lot with this team is from time to time, guys will have open looks, but rather than take that open look, they kick it to the next guy because they know that he has a better look. And so much, and I've talked to Terry about this, it's particularly about the Blazers' ridiculously good shooting this season. And he says, look, a lot of it is shooting is confidence, and a lot of it comes from getting a shot in the flow of the offense and in a position to where you can elevate and shoot with confidence. And what we're seeing is with the players so in tune with each other, they're making that next pass, they're getting that shot, and they're getting a great look in which they have confidence to make the shot, and they are.
Well, and even when they're not passing the ball, as we saw at the end of the Oklahoma City game, you know, that play at the end of the game that Nicholas Batum hit that three-pointer and shot it, that was a play for LaMarcus Aldridge. Batum comes baseline on the curl, notices that Kevin Durant isn't anywhere around him, and is like, well, I'm supposed to dump this ball to LaMarcus,
but
I'm wide open, I'm at the three-point line, and I'll shoot it.
Yeah.
And he takes it, makes it, and, you know, ball game. So.
And even if he had missed that, LaMarcus wouldn't have been pissed. Stotts wouldn't have been mad.
No.
Because it was the right shot in the right in that situation. And so I just think that it was interesting to hear Stotts talk about this at his press conference, because after... I mean, Nate had a lot of success here. When you win 54 games, 50 games, 48 in three straight years, and everything seems to be going well until injuries sabotage it all, it seemed to reinforce his notion that, look, these are the guys we have, and this is how we're going to play. But after watching how exciting and fun it can be to watch, you know, to see a team play an entertaining brand of basketball, it certainly does give you pause to that notion and sort of reinforce what Terry says, that it does matter how you play. And you're seeing a lot of buzz about this team, not just because they're winning, it's mostly because they're winning, but also because they're fun to watch. And
yeah.
I think that's the biggest takeaway I've had with this team after 22 games, well, besides that they're extremely tight-knit in the chemistry standpoint, but they are a team that is fun to watch.
Absolutely, and I think it's... I've been just liking Terry Stotts personally as I do. It's been gratifying to see a guy who, you know, when he was at Dallas and they won the championship, you know, he was a guy who was considered, you know, like their offensive tactician. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times I feel like it's a little tough to tell if those kind of declarations are true or not on a staff because, you know, like case in point, 2 years ago, or I guess it was a year ago now, when Caleb Canales was the quote-unquote defensive coordinator for the Trailblazers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everyone was working on that stuff, you know? Like, I think that... You don't know if a guy is actually the reason why... Or if the coach is the reason why that team is doing whatever it is they're doing well or not well, or if it's one of those things that people just kind of pick up on and he's like, oh, well, he's the offensive coach, so we must give him the credit. Yeah. But, I mean, with Terry, I think you're seeing that... You know, he's taken a group of players that are good players for sure, but you know, after a season and you know a quarter now at this point that he's been under their wing, you know, you can see that it is the coaching to a certain extent. Obviously, you know, the players are very important to that, but you know that Terry has a system that you know he's refined that
and a philosophy
that's working really well right now, and it's kind of cool to see a guy who they brought in because of that Mavericks offense that won. I mean, to a certain extent, you know, that was one of the selling points when they brought in Terry.
Absolutely.
Was that, you know, he was the guy who put together this offense that, you know, had Dirk and a few other nice players, but not, you know, they go in and they beat the Heat, a team that has, you know, like three superstars, mm-hmm. and, you know, they've got Dirk and Jason Terry and Tyson Chandler and Sean Marion, and these are all good players, but, you know, I think if you look at the sum of the parts, you would say, well, that Mavericks team, or the Houston team, the Heat.
There you go.
were obviously the more talented team, but the system that they had in place in Dallas was able to get that championship. And they talked about that when they brought Terry in, and it's cool to see that that is actually happening here in Portland.
Yeah, and I remember when we came off that first long road trip, I had talked to Terry, I think it was in Milwaukee at the shoot around before that game, about the way the team was playing unselfishly and how they were using his system. And I had asked him if this team and the way they share the ball and the way they play had reminded him of any other team. And he said, well, yeah, actually, reminds me a little bit of that NBA championship team with the Dallas Mavericks.
Yeah, so, I can see that.
So there you go. That's pretty lofty plays.
Absolutely.
Praise.
By the way, I just wanted to mention, too, since we were talking those stats, that I think you had mentioned Trailblazers are seventh in assists at 22.9, but they are also second in not allowing opponents assists. So even though Trailblazers are considered basically, you know, middle of the road to maybe even a little below average defensively, when it comes to assists, for whatever reason, you know, the Pacers are giving up 17 assists per game. Trailblazers are next at 18.4. So,
you know, as a side note to this, and we are certainly not going to talk about this right now, but one thing that I think is making the Blazers' defense better than it is supposed to be is that their offense is so damn good that when you can come back and set up on defense and you're not giving away a ton of transition points and you're not, you're running back all crazy, that helps your defense.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
So if they keep scoring at this rate, I think their defense is going to be a little better than everybody thought just because of that fact.
Well, and the reason why I'm not all that concerned about the defense and why it even where they're at now even gives me a little optimism going forward in the season is that, you know, they're I think around somewhere in the high teens to low 20s defensive rating. But yeah, if they get just a little bit better and they are able to sustain their offense or at least keep it, you know, generally close to where it's at now, then they don't have to be a great defensive team.
Absolutely.
They just have to be a decent defensive team and allow their offense to kind of take it from there. And I think you're exactly right, Joe. When you're not, you know, when you're shooting a good percentage and you're not
turning the ball
exactly
over,
and they're having to take the ball out of the bottom of the basket every possession or most of the possessions, yeah, I mean, that allows you to get into your sets and not allow, like you said, those fast break opportunities and just those mistakes on defense that can kind of
give up
make bucket, you look a little worse than you actually
are. Yeah,
there's
no question the secret or the equation for this team's success is lead offense, average to above average defense.
Mm-hmm.
That combination has produced an 18-4 record, and that's what they hope going forward will continue to be their hallmark. So, speaking of going forward, I have noticed, and I've received some questions about this on the Twitter and on the email and et cetera, et cetera.
Not on Facebook.
Not on Facebook, no. Or on Instagram.
Or on Instagram.
That's on lockdown.
Or Snapchat.
Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, me neither. It's just words.
Yeah, I know. With what's going on with the Houston Rockets, which is apropos as they head into town on Thursday, there is obviously a market for Omer Asik right now. And a natural, at least based upon some of the emails and tweets and whatnot I've received, is that, well, hey, why aren't the Blazers going after him?
Mm-hmm.
And so I did a little research into this with some sources in the organization, and there is absolutely no desire on the Blazers' part to pursue a trade for Omer Asik or anything of that nature. And there are several reasons for it. First of all, if you were to look at Omer Asik, and I don't know how to say his name.
I think it's Asik.
Asik?
Omer Asik. But I don't.
How about we just call him the Big A at this point? It's easier.
Or maybe just Omer.
Omer?
Mean, he's the only Omer in the NBA.
Okay,
so
we'll go Omer.
Or I think I say Asik.
Asik?
That's what I usually say Asik.
Asik.
Yeah.
Well, let's just say it however we want.
Okay,
I guess.
Yeah. No, if anyone's got a complaint.
When you look at Asik in a vacuum while being compared to Robin Lopez, it's pretty clear that he's a better player than Lopez. But when you look at the mix that we have right now with the Blazers, he isn't necessarily a better piece to the puzzle.
Yeah.
And first of all, the Blazers, for a variety of reasons, don't want to mess with... Let's start there. That's the number one reason that the Blazers aren't even thinking about considering a trade for him, is the chemistry that this team has.
Mm-hmm.
And why mess with the mojo of what you've done when you're 18-4 and you have the best record in the West? Why go out early in the season when everything's clicking and mess with this? you still have a lot of time left to figure out what deficiencies you have, what guys might get hurt, what weaknesses are exposed down the road. You still have a ton of road games to perhaps be exposed in, and there's a lot of season left. Based upon what you've seen right now, it makes absolutely no sense to go quote-unquote upgrade at that position. And when you look at the fit of Lopez with this team, and I think maybe we'll talk about Lopez here a little bit and what he's meant to this team, but he's kind of been the perfect guy for this group because you have Wall mixed together, those other four starters form an elite offense, which we just got done talking about. Well, Robin Lopez doesn't require, need, or want a ton of shots. He has this role of, which we've talked about before, you go out, you play defense, you man the middle, you're a big body there, you rebound as best you can. And coincidentally, LaMarcus's rebounding numbers are up a lot because of Lopez.
Yeah, that's not a coincidence at all.
The space that he clears, yeah. And so Lopez has been the perfect fit for this team. And you bring in Asik, and all of a sudden is a guy on a big contract who is looking to justify that contract, and so he wants to get his touches, and he wants to score, and that's not what this offense needs. They don't need a center who's doing that. They have plenty of scoring. They need a guy to do those other things, and so that is all part of it as well. And there's a whole bunch of other political correct stuff that goes on. I mean, let's not forget that LaMarcus Aldridge and Robin Lopez are represented by the same agent, Arne Tellem,
who was correct.
Instrumental in helping Robin, Neil Olshey, in kind of saying, yeah, Robin would love to play in Portland if you can make that happen, as these talks were going on over the summer. And to come in and get him in a situation where he thinks his client fits perfectly, and Robin loves it here, and LaMarcus has spoke nothing but highly of him.
I think LaMarcus really likes, I mean, I think he loves what Robin brings on the court, but I think there's something about Robin I think that LaMarcus likes on a personal level. Mm-hmm. And they're coming from pretty different backgrounds, and I don't think they're even all that similar of people, but I just get the sense that there is, the way that Robin conducts himself, the way that, like, he doesn't, I mean, and
not about himself.
Exactly, he's not about himself. I don't know if any of you have watched video of Robin in the locker room post game. You know, he doesn't want to talk about himself at all, and he doesn't, in a lot of respect, he doesn't want to talk. Period. And I think that there's something about that kind of quietness that I think LaMarcus, who's also been a bit like that himself, I think there's something he identifies with there, and I think he looks at Robin as someone who, I mean, for lack of a better term, has his back and feels like, you know, like this is a guy who I can ride with. And, you know, a guy like Asik, I don't know. And yeah. I mean, even if that were the case, and even if maybe they'd get along great, you're still looking at this point, you're doing it midseason. And like, that's a hard thing to do. And with LaMarcus too, LaMarcus is a guy who, you know, he's not going to let you in right away.
No,
and
maybe not for a year.
Yeah, and so like to go from a guy who there really seems to be a connection with to a guy like Asik who might be an upgrade defensively, and that's what people say. And you know, to a certain extent, I wouldn't disagree with that because I'm not as versed in those things as other people are. But it is a guy too who you got to remember he quit on his team. You know, like he didn't show up for two games basically, and while I understand the sentiment and being that I've spent quite a bit of time around players and talked to them off the record quite a bit throughout the years, it's not an odd thing for a player to be upset about his role changing so drastically, especially when a guy is paying particularly well as he was. So like I don't necessarily even fault that, but it's something you have to add into your decision making process. Exactly.
Regardless.
And how is that and just how that's gonna be taken in a locker room, you know, like, because I think for players, more than anything, it's like, hey, we have to, on some level, you know, we don't have control over necessarily where we're going to play and what minutes we're going to play and the style of play and so on and so forth. But as players, the one thing we all should do is show up and play when we're called, if for no other reason than for our teammates. You may hate the general manager, you may hate the coach, but push comes to shove, we're supposed to be, you know, a family. We're supposed to be professionals, and we're supposed to come out there and do for each other. And everyone in that locker room in Houston knows that they'd be better with Omar Asik playing a backup role until, I mean, a backup role period, if not a backup role until they can figure out somewhere to send him. But he doesn't really want to do that, you know, and that's, and guys know about that. So that's something you got to kind of add in there as well.
Yeah. Now, first of all, let's say the Blazers did want to pursue a trade. From what I'm hearing, the requests of the Rockets are quite ludicrous.
Yeah.
We're talking about Nicholas Batum high.
And yeah.
Like, so even if there were a match, and there's not, but even if there were a match and the salaries worked, the Blazers have no interest in doing it. No ifs, ands, or buts. It's one of those things where I think it's kind of silly to write a story about this team doesn't want to do this.
Yeah.
It's like that. But it's a good topic for us to cover, and so I've gotten enough questions about it that I thought I would go do some reconnaissance.
That's good. And yeah, you know, I think what, you know, I know that Mark Stein, ESPN, had just a little line item that was basically saying exactly what you had said, was that, yeah, I mean, the Blazers are, I think the word to use is thrilled with the play of Robin Lopez, and I agree. It's frustrating. I've had this thing where I've been saying it for years that something not happening is not news.
Yeah, it's even in today's ridiculous Twitter minute news by the minute, every second, every blogger out looking for blog hits era. I think it's ridiculous to write a story about something not happening.
Yeah, it's. I get the interest is there, and at a certain point, you know, you get into a real academic discussion of, you know, do journalists make news or do they respond to the desires of their audience?
Yeah, yeah.
And you know,
it's a fine line,
exactly. Yeah. But yeah, and it's one of those things where people see they know the situation, they know the object's not happy, and they know that Houston has to trade him. They see the Trailblazers, a team that is doing well, but that maybe people think, you know,
we'll need something
exactly.
Real, yeah.
And so I think they just kind of assume, well, and the Trailblazers made a trade with the Rockets for Thomas Robinson.
Right.
I believe that Neil O'Shea has said on a couple occasions he's got a really good relationship with Daryl Morey. And, you know, so I think you take all that in together and people say, well, you know, if they're going to try to trade him anyways, which we know they're going to do, then maybe the Trailblazers would be one of those places. And I think it starts to take on a life of, this is something that's actually been discussed, rather than this is just something that people from the outside are looking at and saying, well, I guess that could make sense. And there's, you know, I'm always, whenever I write about that kind of stuff, I try to be real forthright in saying, hey, this is not even a rumor. This is Bill Simmons and Zach Lowe on Grantland just spitballing this idea. It's not even something that actually has happened or has even been talked about within a front office. It's just something that some guys are talking about. And while people like to hear about it, that doesn't mean that it exists.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. It's just a thought. You know, it's ethereal.
And with that said, I think it would be, I think Blazers fans, and certainly from my perspective as someone who covers the team, slowly by slowly and bit by bit, you start to appreciate what Robin Lopez gives you.
Yeah.
And right now, his stats for an underappreciated kind of under the radar guy are pretty dang good. He's averaging 9.2 points, 8.6 rebounds, and 1.5 blocks, which that's exactly what you want from him. It might even be a little more scoring than I had anticipated.
Well, and I've noticed, and I followed up on this last night with Terry, it seems to me like they're trying to go to Robin early in games.
Especially early, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, the first couple of possessions, they're trying to get Robin involved. I kind of thought it was maybe to just show the opposing defense, hey, we're not going to just ignore this guy. So if you think you're going to just be able to double LaMarcus right off the jump, you're wrong, because we feel very confident being able to go to Robin Lopez. And Terry also said it was, you know, that, and you had mentioned playing with four players, and Robin, you mentioned that last night as well, that he knows he's not going to get a lot of touches, and he doesn't particularly care about that. But he is an NBA basketball player, and NBA basketball players like to score and be involved on both sides of the ball. So Terry said, you know, in a small way, he does it because he knows that it's going to get Robin just a little bit involved in the game right off the jump.
Throw a dog a bone,
and that's going to result in him being a little more aggressive, maybe looking for his offense, hitting the boards harder, just, you know, just giving just a little bit of motivation. Not that he particularly needs it all that much, but just a little something to say, hey,
I appreciate you.
You're doing a good job, and we're going to keep you in mind. And just because you're out there with four guys who are all, you know, pretty talented offensive players, doesn't mean that you're not going to get yours from time to time. So,
absolutely.
And I think that that's, you know, you mentioned all Trailblazer fans as well, and appreciating what Robin Lopez does. I would say that I was heartened by the reaction the people had when the idea of a Robin Lopez for Oshik trade was even floated in the first place a couple weeks ago. For the most part, people were like, "No, why?
Why?"
And they're like, "Robin's doing a great job. You know, he's getting paid X amount. Oshik is getting paid X amount more." And I think you had kind of mentioned it even when we first started talking about this. That if the Trailblazers were going, if you agree that the Trailblazers need to make some kind of move to add some talent to this team, if they're really going to be serious about, you know, seeing as far as they could take this year, starting center to me is not that doesn't seem to me to be an issue right now. And while I don't think this team has a ton of issues right now, it if I was going to try to add a piece somewhere, I wouldn't think let's get rid of our perfectly functional, doing a good job center for a guy who's going to be a slight upgrade over him. I mean, if you want to do something, maybe another big off the bench or exactly. And that's the thing. I mean, I don't even really know
at
what
this
else
point,
because
18-4, there's not
exactly.
A lot
there's not. There's yeah. exactly. I don't know that I would say that there's anything they quote unquote need, but
because you're
but I can
to have
certainly
some
say
in the backcourt coming up soon.
Yes,
CJ comes back. But sorry, I interrupted.
Well, no, I was actually done with that thought, anyways. Okay. But just the idea that if you're looking to make a trade because you feel like this team is better than we thought they were going to be, and why wait for another season? Let's just try to do whatever we can do now. I would not start with starting center.
And also, you do that at the trade deadline.
Yeah.
You don't do that a month and a half into the season.
Or when something goes wrong.
Right.
You know, because
right.
there's going to be a period of transition anyways. So it might as well be a period of transition when you're already kind of struggling as it is. Say, you know, say the Trailblazers, you know, they lose 7-10 or something like that. That's when, at
you
that point, you're like, okay, maybe we address some of these things. Not when you've won whatever it is, you know, 10 of your last 12 or whatever. So, and because when you bring in that new player, there's going to be, like I said, a transition, and there's going to be some struggles there. But you might as well struggle when what you're doing at that particular time isn't working, not let's throw ourselves into a struggle that we're going to have to work our way through even
because
when we're
we
playing
made a
well.
Trade
exactly.
Unnecessarily to mess with the mojo, yeah. And another good one thing that Robin's been kind of sliding under the radar is he is giving this team a ton of second chance points and extra possessions. I think he's third in the league in offensive rebounding behind DeAndre Jordan and Andre Drummond going into Tuesday night's game. And that's ahead of Kevin Love and Dwight Howard and Anthony Davis and Roy Hibbert. So those are some pretty damn good offensive rebounders
there. And I think something you wouldn't necessarily have expected.
Right. It's not one of those things that really stands out, too, which is sort of fitting for Robin Lopez. And I just like a lot of the little tiny, you know, and it gets cliche to talk about the intangibles and stuff like that. It seems like every time you write something about Joel Freeland, that's what you end up writing about. But it really is what Robin brings. And I'm waiting for that sucker to snap one day, because I think there's going to be something on the court that really pisses him off, and he's just, you've seen flashes of it.
Yeah.
And I've heard stories about him breaking glass doors in Phoenix and just losing his stuff at a practice and going, you know, I'm waiting for him to just, because there's been a couple times where you can just see that little, he's just ready to kind of, just boom, and then it's going to be fun to watch.
Yeah, well, there was that, it was in the Pacer game. There were, towards the end of the game, when Lance Stephenson fouled out, both him and Robin Lopez were kind of diving for a ball, and there was I think your colleague Bruce Ely got a photo of it. Stephenson
kind of
exactly
yeah,
like he had
yeah.
like wrapped him up a little bit, and they had both gone to ground, and I think Robin tried to stand up, and I think Stephenson kind of pushed on him a little bit, and Robin like turned at him and gave him this look like,
Do you see me?
Are we going to go? Or, like, why are you doing that?
Yeah,
and so, yeah, Robin is a guy that, yeah, there's a little, there's something there.
You need a little of that,
yeah.
I think, and you need a little of that nasty. And the Blazers have lacked that over the years, because you damn sure didn't see that out of Marcus Camby.
No.
And Greg never got a chance to show whether or not he had that. And
you had it with Joel, but, you know, he was still,
yeah.
you know, a little more limited.
Well, and at the end of his career, you're right, you did have that in Joel, actually. And that was one of the best attributes he had.
Joel Prisbilla, for those of you at home.
But by the end, when they needed it most, he was obviously a shell of his former self. So,
by the way, since we mentioned offensive rebounding as well, just jump in here and say Trailblazers are fifth in offensive rebounding in the NBA at 12.7.
About that.
Yeah, which you would not have suspected. Teams above them: Detroit, New Orleans, Minnesota, and Denver.
All big men.
Yes,
teams.
All large teams.
You know, one thing that we don't talk about a lot is the Blazers. I mean, with LaMarcus and Robin, that's a pretty big front line.
Yeah.
I mean, LaMarcus is dang near 7 feet, but he's also so lanky.
Yeah. Well, and you had Nick in there as well, at small forward, and Nick is definitely a wingspan guy. You know, I would say Robin is only one of those guys that's really just a hefty body, but yeah, a long, I would say above average athletic. I think that, you know, both LaMarcus and Nick are above average athletes, and I would say that Robin, while he's not, you know, a super athlete or anything, is not... He's not a stiff either, you know. Like, so.
Yeah, I'm not gonna go touting his athleticism.
No, I'm not either. But all I'm saying is, I wouldn't put him in the plodding big man category. He's not exactly ultra coordinated, or he's not gonna jump out of the building or anything. Yeah. But he's not just ground bound, you know. I wouldn't put him up there with the DeAndre Jordans or JaVale McGee's or those kind of guys. Smarter than those guys, though.
Yeah. And he's really an eclectic guy. I remember writing about him when he first came into town and asking him, you know, how he would describe himself to Portland fans. And he kind of looked at me like I thought he was going to snap on me. And I'm like, well, you know, you're into comic books. And he's like, oh, yeah, I would say I'm definitely atypical when compared to the NBA. And we've definitely seen that. My colleague Steve Dean wrote a very interesting column about having Robin Lopez come over to his house and play with his comic book collection. So, I mean, and that was pretty fitting. It was funny to, because I'm sure Robin gets, and all these guys get roped into random things like this at all times, and they're like, why am I doing this? But maybe it's worth my while, so I'll go check it out. And he had his older brother hang out in the car while he went in to see Dean's comic book. And Steve Dean is a huge comic book aficionado to the level of Robin Lopez, if not more, or same level anyway. And after a while, after he had seen some of the comics, and I don't know squat about comics, so I can't pretend to relay what they were, but it was so legit that Robin had to say, now wait a minute, now I need to go get my brother to come in. And so he went out and got his, or he texted his brother and had him come in. And so anyway, it's kind of it was a fun little color story.
Yeah,
some
strong genes in that Lopez family as well. They have a very distinct look about them.
Absolutely.
I mean, like, if you saw Robin's brother, not Brooke, obviously, his older brother, it would take you all of about 30 seconds to be like, yeah, that's gotta be Robin Lopez's brother. So, yeah.
Okay. Well, I think we're about wrapping things up here. We've covered some areas of high caliber fun, or lots of lip smacking. I don't know. A little bit of both, maybe. So unless there's anything else you want to add, do you have a food rec for the week?
I do have a food rec. One I actually got from, again, one of your colleagues, Michael Russell? At the Oregonian, who I follow on Twitter.
Another good Twitter follow.
Yeah. Trifecta over in, I guess it's, I don't know what neighborhood that is. It's over off. It's off of Grand by,
kind of by where I got married, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Not the people at home
that's
are gonna.
True.
That's not gonna help
the
them out a whole lot. But
where
that dance place is on Grand. Yeah, I guess it's south. I guess industrial close in southeast. I guess what it would be called. Yeah. Anyways, place called Trifecta. Just recently opened up. It's by the Portland Ballet building.
Oh, right.
As well, if that helps anyone. I think Robo Taco and the original Bunk are actually over in that same general vicinity.
Which is the only Bunk I really like to go to. Although I will go to the Bunk Bar down.
See, I usually go to Bunk Bar just because it's so claustrophobic in the one in the original.
It's got a New York kind of deli vibe.
Yeah.
If
New York Deli vibe is standing like four guys deep outside
and then having
to fold my body and have to eat my sandwich, then I'm happy to go to a different place. But
so anyway, Trifecta.
But anyways, yeah, Trifecta. I went there with my wife. Great drinks. Kind of a small plates kind of thing. As we have people walking in the studio here. No problem, guys. Fantastic food. Like I said, good service. It's right on the borderline for me for, like, being a little too Portland precious. You know, like, I think, like, the waiter was wearing, like, suspenders or something like that, you know. And
now, you can't. See, my thing about that is I get that argument, but unless someone is just out and out rude to me or treats me, I don't care.
They were very nice, too. They actually got us. We didn't have a reservation. I didn't realize that it was a place you needed a reservation at. And as soon as I walked in, I was like, yeah, I was a little underdressed, too. Exactly. But the guy who was Mayor D-ing or whatever that
served as Maitre D'.
Yeah. you know, they got us in before someone else's reservation. He was like, well, you know, you have X amount of time. If you think you can eat in that amount of time, I was like, yeah, no problem.
Dude,
we can do that.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's
but
go on,
my thing about going back to this point is I don't care if you're a hipster or you're OG or you're a goofy geek or sporty, whatever your style is, as long as you're, you know, treat me right. Like, I don't care what vibe you give off. Like, I guess.
Well, no, so and I'm not saying the vibe of the employees. I'm saying the vibe of the restaurant.
Establishment?
Yeah, exactly. You know,
now,
like,
what kind of food was it?
It's I would say, like I said, it's small plates that weren't really all that small, actually, to be perfectly honest. You know, just kind of contemporary Portland, Northwest cuisine. Yeah, they had a Brussels sprouts dish with a chorizo that was fantastic. I'm a huge Brussels sprouts fan.
As well you should.
Potatoes boulanger, which is in duck fat, which was also fantastic. Had the steak frites, which were okay. And like I said, I had a Sazerac that was quite good. Mike Russell said that next time I should get one of the champagne drinks because they're supposedly fantastic.
Yeah.
There's a bakery in the restaurant as well, so they had delicious fresh baked goods. And just an all around it was a pleasant surprise. Actually, it was not what I was expecting. I was expecting something a little more kind of bar type-ish, and it was definitely not. And it's very close to the home of our friend Tim Brown, who is also one of your colleagues, a very Oregon Live.
Our first Tim Brown shout-out.
Yes, first. It's Tim's birthday, by the way, too, today.
Happy birthday, Tim.
Happy 45th birthday,
Tim
Brown.
I'll tell you what, man, you are getting younger every year.
Yeah.
At least you look younger every year.
Yeah, well, that Hitler Youth haircut that he has, you know, is very.
One of my favorite Bruce Ely paparazzi fan shots. Was Timmy B at the Blazers game looking like, I don't even know how to describe him. Hitler Youth would be a good.
Yeah.
A good
one. I don't use that very often because I feel like people might take the wrong. But that's exactly what that haircut is. And it's become quite popular. And for those of you, since we're talking on podcast here, it's that look where the sides of your head are shaved and mostly the back too, and you just kind of have that top part
real shiny, kind of slick back.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's a very fine haircut to have. I can't do it myself because I don't have the hair to do it with. But it is a Hitler Youth haircut, though.
Brownie's,
I mean, that's what it is.
Strong, though.
Yeah,
he's repping hard. I like what he's got going on there. And he's a guy who always changes his look. Like, every 6 months or so, he's a different human.
Yeah. He has a friend who is a hairstylist that he goes to a lot.
Okay.
So I think that's part of it. And, you know, it's the Frenchness in him as well.
True.
It's the notion of fashion meaning something.
Yeah.
So you better listen to this now, Tim, because we just burned 5 minutes talking about your sorry ass.
Jesus.
So.
Well, let me give my food rec really quickly, and then we will we'll carry on. Lana and I went to Lovely's 50-50 the other night.
Delicious.
It is one of our favorite pizza establishments. Now, a Pizza Shoals rightfully gets its...
Who, my parents went there before the game against the Mavericks.
Oh, nice.
And they were enamored with it, yes.
Thought it was delicious.
They did.
It is.
Yeah.
And it is on par with any of the best pizza places that I've ever been to, and that includes... eating in Italy. But that notwithstanding, Lovely's is a very underrated pizza place. And I guess I shouldn't say that because it is always crowded and a lot of people know about it and they go there. But it has delicious pizza and their veggies are also, speaking of Brussels sprouts, they always have a good Brussels sprouts. Lon and I went there the other night. They didn't have a Brussels sprouts dish that night, actually, though. But they had a good cauliflower dish. Their salads are very good. So we got a couple of those. And they always have a very good IPA on tap. They had the Boneyard IPA last time we went, in case you enjoy an adult beverage or two.
Yeah.
And their pizzas are just off the hook. They're fantastic. Wood-burning oven they have back there.
Good ice cream, too, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, yeah. Salt and Straw is often touted for its ice cream, but the original salted caramel ice cream is from Lovely's, and I will go there and buy a pint of that regularly because it is that good. But so go to Lovely's 5050. It's on Mississippi if you're wandering over in the North Portland region of Hipsterville, Mississippi. It is you will not be disappointed, I guarantee you that. And yeah, hopefully you were not disappointed with the third episode of the Rip City Report.
Hopefully not.
We are going to try to do this every Tuesday as much as we can, as the nonstop NBA schedule and our travel schedule demands, or allows, I should say. We will be leaving for a brutal, awful, terrible, no good, bad road trip on Friday. The Blazers will play 4 games in 5 nights. That's 2 back-to-backs if you're counting at home. That features a back-to-back against Philly and then Detroit, and then a day off, and then a back-to-back in Cleveland and in Minneapolis. All the cities are cold. Most of them feature bad travel, particularly.
Oh, man, that is brutal, too. I mean, Philly, why Philly is always at the beginning of that trip, too. And
why not allow them to spend a day off in Philly?
I would like, exactly. I would like to have a day off in Philly sometime. I would like to be able to see some of the many pieces of history that Philly has to offer. But we always go there at the first game of a trip. And you get in, you're tired, and the next day you go to the game. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And then the next day after that, you go to Detroit.
To Detroit. To Rochester, if you're traveling with the Trailblazers. You're not getting within 50 miles of Detroit, unfortunately. Yeah. I've never been to Detroit. I've been to Auburn Hills
which
is not Detroit, absolutely.
And sorry, Mike Rice, but it's the worst stop on the NBA circuit. The airport.
Okay.
You think OKC?
Well, I'm coming from a traveling with the team perspective, so yeah. I'm not flying into whatever the airport is in Detroit. I'm not having to drive back to Detroit. So in that regard, I will defer to your expertise when it comes to a traveling beat writer's difficulties.
Yeah.
Yes. I remember that. Did you get a ticket in Detroit too, or was that just Quick? I know Quick got one. I thought the last one you had gotten one too,
no.
Or something like that.
No.
I thought you had some.
I got a
issue.
Parking ticket in Denver because I was parked in a street outside at like midnight or 12:30. And yes, you have to plug your meter at 12:30 in Denver, or else you will get a ticket.
Well, that's how they keep their taxes so low there, is by just nickel and diming the crap out of you.
It's ridiculous. I mean, really, 12:30 at night, you get a ticket?
That's not right.
Okay, yeah. We're on the verge of having a bitter KC. Yeah.
And an off day in Cleveland, by the way, too, which is, huzzah, off day in Cleveland.
Thanks, NBA.
Let me go to Dan Gilbert's casino and
that's the only thing popping in Cleveland is that damn casino.
That casino, too, man, is... Ooh.
Shady.
I mean, even for a casino, that one is... It's nice, but it's packed with people. And, like, you're in there and you're like, this is the only place for people to be at in downtown Cleveland because this place is chock-a-block full of people. And it's, it's a casino. And I love gaming as much as the next guy on everything besides basketball, of course. But yeah, I walked through that and I'm like, man, I'm not getting a good feeling from this.
On a better note, the Noles are in the national championship game.
Yes, congratulations. Way to go, Ducks, on your Alamo Bowl and your snowball fights that get your starting tight end suspended. A great year for tight ends at Oregon, by the way. You got Colt Lyer, quitting it, and then you got Farrell Brown getting suspended for the Alamo Bowl against Texas because they're pelting.
I mean, I did stupid stuff when I was 18, 19. Don't get me wrong, but what are you doing?
I almost exclusively did stupid stuff when I was 18,
exactly.
19. But
that's why you're living.
I remember when I follow Josh Huff is one of the only Duck football players I follow on Twitter. When he was saying we're all going to meet and have a snowball fight at this time, the first thing I thought was that is not going to turn out well. Someone is going to take it too far, and it's going to result in something bad. And sure enough,
boom,
it did.
Okay, we are approaching an hour of a podcast, and we'll end it there. We really appreciate you guys checking us out.
Absolutely.
Please do continue to listen to us every week. You can hit us on the blog, of course, that we have mentioned at forwardcenter.net. Or OregonLive.com/Blazers. We post the podcast on there. You can also subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Just type in Rip City Report and it will pop up. I am Joe Freeman of The Oregonian. He is Casey Holdall of Trailblazers.com, and we will talk to you next time.